we were at the point where we were talking about what kind of stories did I tell myself that I need to heal to convince myself that the power person message that I either received or made up was true. Things like, you know, I'm so stupid, I deserve to suffer, I'm a bad person, I deserve what I get. Those kinds of messages, what did I have to tell myself about myself? So we asked the question, it's actually step 10 in the new power person worksheet. What stories did you tell yourself about your power person to convince them that what they told you was true? And now it's what stories did I tell myself to convince myself that the power person messages that I made up or received were true? And the next step is looking at, you know, it's interesting if you look at the word spelling. I mean, we say that's putting this group of characters together. But look at the word behind the word, putting people under a spell. And this is done with words. It's done with letters. And so the question we ask at this step in the worksheet is, when you were under the spell of the power person dynamic, you believe the perceptual constructs of your mind, and then we're asking you to honor truth and actually look at the facts and determine whether or not your mind's construct is really truly provable. Asking yourself the question, is the conclusion that I've generated in my mind really true? And ask yourself, and the whole idea of this worksheet, the whole idea of the codependence to interdependence communication practice intensive is to unwind the thought disorders of the mind related to the power person. And virtually every person's life on planet Earth today is controlled by this power person dynamic. That's my offering. You know, just take a look at the news and look at the amount of hostility and fear and rage and war and suffering and drama and trauma. That's all power person stuff. So to actually start to question yourself, what is it in the actuality of the situation, if I really allow it in, that would support me in healing my underlying thought disorders? So one might have come to the conclusion that, well, you know, my power person never supported me. And once that thought was planted, then whatever support was offered was literally refused. And so now the question's being asked, if I tell myself the truth, were there ways that I blocked awareness of how they supported me, how they were true to me? And the request is to start to look at alternative realities, the one your mind is generating. And the idea here is to escape from the generationally patterned tendency to generate realities about self and others that are based in hostility or fear. So, you know, you might move into something like, I'm experiencing an old pattern here. I got it, man. I've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people. Maybe it's time for me to forgive my part in this. And to look at the thought disorders, start to look at the emotions going on in your world, identify your emotion. And then step up rather than, as most people do, living in the one world universal religion of blame. You made me feel mad. You made me feel sad. You hurt me. Rather than living in that, stop and ask yourself the question. And it actually refers back to an earlier step to look at something you did earlier. And identify your emotion and then let yourself become aware of the thought you used to create that emotion. You know, if the emotion, let's say, is guilt, And you tap into feeling the emotion of guilt. And, every time I'm around my power person, my parent, I feel guilty. They make me feel guilty. It's like, no, you have thought disorders that create guilt. And of course, if they're related to your power person, whenever you're around them, those thoughts are going to tend to move. But if you start to own the thoughts, then you start to change the thoughts. You don't have to be stuck with those thought disorders. And it can be very helpful to identify where you're feeling the emotional energy in your body. Where is the energy stored? Where is it moving? Then we move forward to looking at any form of fear or hostility-based messages and take responsibility for having given fear and/or hostility-based messages to others or to self. These things tend to be patterned in the mind. And oftentimes, the hostility and fear-based messages are done to achieve the goal of control, of avoidance, of distraction, of deflection. And to look into those messages. And as you start to review these things, you get to realize these are my thoughts and I can change them. If the majority of my thoughts are based in hostility and fear around any given situation, then I'm going to suffer from a literal mental illness in that situation. People break down. I'm powerless. I can't help it. I can't do anything. I can't escape from this. So once you've identified the messages that you've given to either yourself or to others, then the next step is to go back and look at, do you recall a time? Look at each message that you've used to, do any kind of control or avoidance, distraction, deflection. Literally write those messages down. There's space in the worksheet to write those down. And then in the next step, I recall a time when my power person conveyed those messages to me. And so go back situation by situation, and what you'll find is the habitual ways that one tends to avoid, distract, control, deflect, were things that were learned in relationship to the power person, or things that one observed the power person doing. So then take each of those messages and just take a look and see if there was a time when that your power person gave you that message, and make note of how you felt when you received those messages. Then we move into what in general did I perceive my power person's needs to be? And what did my power person do to get those needs met? And were their behaviors just and fair? And so the invitation at this stage in the worksheet is to identify a power person behavior and then just do the assessment. Was it just and fair? And then your rationale, why or why not? And what this will do is it will tend, as you start to focus there, to bring you into a more responsible place with your own power person thinking, the dynamics that went on with your power person. And then ask yourself the question, have I ever exhibited any needs similar to my power person? And most people find, yeah, they're all the same ones. And then what have you done to get your needs met? And were your behaviors just and fair? Why or why not? And then go back and check it out with what you saw with the power person. You'll probably find there's a whole lot of projection there. Take a look at what did I either think or feel I had to do to meet my power person's needs? And were those actions based in love or in fear or hostility? So what did I either think or feel, like you say, well, whenever I'm around my dad, whenever I'm around my mom, I feel like I need to, whatever they, so you want to identify that and recognize that all of those feelings are just based on aberrant thinking. You can choose to do those things out of choice without having the hostility or fear dynamic behind it to say no. The next stage in the worksheet is to start to look at, was there ever punishment from your power person? And if so, how were you punished? And to really look closely, we're unwinding these, the way that your mind generates realities around your power person. And the realities that tend to drive you when you become ultra stressed, this is what it will allow you to unwind. So if it was punishment, how did I feel? What was my emotional response? And were there any thoughts or thought disorders in response to that punishment? You know, if you talk to average psychologists today, they'll tell you that 90 to 95, maybe as much as 98% of our thinking is unconscious. And if we never review these things, then whenever they're resonated into activity, and stress is what resonates them into activity, they'll tend to take over. They'll become the behaviors that you do, oftentimes against your own will and choice. It isn't Dr. Feelgood to surface and look at them, but it sure is Dr. Healgood. You sure can step in and change those dynamics consciously, purposely. And then the worksheet invites you to take a look and see if you've ever done any of the behaviors, including the punishment, that you observed your power person using to get you to achieve the goals they had for you. If I've done any of those behaviors, who did I do it to? How did it feel in my body when I did those behaviors? And of course, how do you suppose it felt for them, the person that you did the behavior to? Did you have to give anything up in order to meet your power person's needs? Remember, power person is the person that had more control over your life at some point than you did, was not functioning out of love, and you perceived it as survival. This leads, when those three things happen simultaneously, and it's usually a child and a parent, it leads to massive blocks of unconscious information that, when resonated into activity, takes over one's life, oftentimes against their own will and choice. And the tendency is for these things to be replicated. You go back to the Aramaic language, and you hear their understanding of what's going on. You hear them say, look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. And of course, we're not just talking about the male parents. Look to the lives of the parents. In one place, it specifically says the sins, and remember that word sin is an archery term, simply means off the mark. The energetic patterns, the behavior patterns, the word patterns, the thought patterns, the punishment patterns that were off the mark for a human being, off the mark with love, will tend to be passed, will be passed from three up to three, at the third and fourth generation, pardon me. And so as you review those things, especially if you do the forgiveness work that empowers you, or I should say more correctly, uncovers the empowerment that is already in you. You already have everything you need within you. The teacher that's going to show it to you is within you. It's not out here in the world. And so the next question that the worksheet asks is, did my power person ever block, ignore, or prevent their own needs from being met? And if so, how did they do that? And then, have you ever done the same? Take a look at whether or not you blocked, ignored, or prevented your own needs from being met. The next section goes into asking the question that if you were raised in a codependent household, and how can you tell if you were raised in a codependent household? Did you ever hear the words, you made me? You make me so mad. That's a codependent household. Pretty rare for there to be something other than that. So if you were raised in a codependent household, what were the rules you perceived you needed to follow in order to survive in that household? What, when you were functioning out of your power person dynamic, was your definition of love? And if your definition of love was something like, I love you, do you love me? Then know that you're not talking about love at all, because the essence of human life is love. It's a noun, it's a state of being, it's who we are. What we're looking with to do with this work is to uncover, to support each person in uncovering the truth of their being as love and coming into direct full experience of that. And if you look at the definitions of love that you learned in relationship to your power person, how's that impacted your relationships? How's that played out for you? How's it working for you? The objective of this particular intensive, the objective of this and every worksheet is to free us from the habituated generational thought, word, and behavior patterns that tend to run people unconsciously. And when you say to somebody, why did you do that? Most people come up with, I don't know. And what they're really saying is, I have this unconscious prompt in my mind when I have this type of goal to step into this particular type of behavior. And if the behavior is based in some form of hostility or fear, when you get right down to the root of it, the majority of it was initiated in response to and in mimicking power person dynamic. What we're looking to do with this tool, because it runs so many lives, is to support people in understanding these dynamics and clean them up in their own lives, in their own minds. So that's our objective. And I hope you find that useful. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. So someone press 1, you're first in line. We started early, so we've got 39 minutes. We have plenty of time.
Yay. So if you're in listener land and you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show directly on your phone. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel, and we'll be having a conversation. So what's on your mind? How can we support you? Push 1, let's talk about it.
I worked with someone the other day who asked the question of, you know, he realized he was in a codependent relationship, and it's like, why? How does that happen? You kind of described that, but
Well, if you look at our Healing Through Relationships workshop, one of the serious, but I present kind of as a tongue-in-cheek line that I have in that workshop that I repeat, is most relationships are based in matching bags of garbage. And the world calls them love relationships. We have this attraction to one particular person. And occasionally it might be because of the state of being of each of those two people. But more often than not, it's the bags of garbage that create the resonance that causes us to turn our heads in a particular direction because of that energy link. People go into their relationships based on matching bags of garbage, hiding, pretending to be something that they're not, and hiding whatever it is that they haven't dealt with in their lives. You know, oftentimes the message coming from the power person implies to a child that they're so broken that the child discards all awareness of who they are, and when they come to a new relationship, it's almost like, well, I know that who I am is worth nothing, therefore, what do you need for me to be in order to love me, quote unquote? Put those words in quotes because nobody's ever going to love you. Love isn't a verb, it's a noun, it's a state of being. So when one has bought into the idea that who they are has no real value, then they think that approval is love. And they'll do virtually anything to be approved of. You know, love is not a behavior trait. Love is not a behavior we can engage in. It's the essence of being a human being. And saying, I love you or I love myself is one of the most fundamental mistakes that we can make as human beings. And that might shock some people. But when most people say the words, I love you, I mean, you know, look at people who come together, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you, please marry me, now we get married, and then it isn't long before the honeymoon is over, and what has happened? What was called love has now turned to hate. It wasn't a relationship based in love, it was a relationship based in matching bags of garbage. I mean, it's so common that we have a saying for it in the culture, the honeymoon is over. What does that mean? When they talk about love, we're talking about approval rather than attraction based in the truth of who we are. I'd offer it's an important, though subtle, truth to integrate, realizing that love is not a behavior trait, not a behavior you can engage in, not something you can get, not something you can do, not something you can give or get from another. It's our created essence. It's a state of being. So you can't love someone, you can't love self, because love is a noun, it's not a verb. When somebody tells their minds, be loving, my mind tries with the experiences and many false beliefs that it's acquired through 1,000 generations to guide me to being loving. Now, hold a newborn child, and notice when you tap into the essence of that newborn that you're tapping into love, and the child's not loving you, the child is love. You listen to all the insane definitions of love. Our culture, how many have ever heard a parent say, I'm only doing this, i.e. beating you or punishing you, because I love you. This hurts me more than it hurts you. That's not human life. That's not a human being functioning. But that's the repeating of a generational belief or something that somebody read in a book, that the best way to, quote unquote, love a child is to beat them into submission. I mean, you hear it out of churchianity all the time. Spare the rod, spoil the child. Excuse me, the rod was something you leaned on for support. It was not something you beat a little kid with. I can't tell you over the years how many people, when I've talked about this topic, said, well, you know, my father beat me, whipped me, is usually the word, didn't hurt me. Oh, really? Yeah, under stress, what kind of venom do you spew toward your partner? That's the venom that was put into you when your power person beat you. And when you say it didn't hurt you, you've totally and completely blocked from your life the sensitive state of being that you were in as a child. And the overwhelming trauma and hurt of the first time that that person who was supposed to cherish you turned their venom on you, turned their generational power person dynamic on you. There's so many false definitions of love that pass in most people's minds as love. It can be hate. It can be implanting fear, punishment, abuse, intimidation. It can all be accepted as a substitute for love. And someone doing that will convince you or attempt to convince you that they're only doing it because I love you. If one takes on the goal of realizing themselves as love and then sets goals for the mind to support them in functioning out of love, to be love, then that person could never get lost in such an error as the culture puts out there. If one holds those false definitions and sets goals based on those definitions, they'll get a feel-good hit of dopamine out of achieving that goal. Because when you achieve a goal, you get an internal reward, this hit of dopamine. And dopamine's been called happy powder. Oh, this feels good. The abusive parent gets a dopamine fix, a chemically induced internal dose of pleasure from abusing their child. Because the mind can get lost in false definitions. I love the insight that Liam Neeson, the actor, offered. Quote, here's what he says. Everyone says love hurts. But that's not true. Everyone gets these things confused with love. But in reality, love is the only thing in the world that covers up all pain and makes someone feel wonderful again. Love is the only thing in the world that doesn't hurt. Powerful thought, Liam. Thank you. My offering is that when you tap into the truth of who you are as love, it is the active presence of love in you that is the light in which truth becomes visible. There's a whole different process that happens in the mind when you shift out of telling your mind to be loving and tell your mind that you are love and to support you functioning as love. Because when you do that, my focus is now on my internal condition. And the mistakes that we've just talked about above become impossible to get lost in. From there, if errors have been made and correction is needed, that goal can be accomplished. But if you're trying to tell your mind to be loving, it'll go through every definition and misdefinition. You know, it's interesting that Vladimir Lenin, a man responsible probably for more deaths in history than any human being ever, said the way you destroy a culture is change the meaning of its words. So when you are asking your mind to support you functioning as love, rather than be whatever aberrant definitions perhaps are already in your mind, then corrections can occur and the goal can be accomplished. And the mind, when this course correction occurs, if I have the tools, will produce behavior prompts that support me experiencing the truth of who I am and what I am, rather than playing out the almost universal fraud that love is a verb. I've had people over the years not getting that distinction say to me, well, it's not a big deal. What does it matter? Okay, so if I'm going to be love or if I'm going to do love, what's the difference? It's no big deal. Well, let's use an example. Let's imagine that someone has a really severe circulatory disorder and they go to a specialist, a doctor, and the doctor tells them that they need a specific treatment to fix the problem with their cells, and they tell you that it involves the epidermis and epithelial cells, two different types of cells. And you ask the doctor, well, which cells are you going to treat? And the doctor says, what does it matter? It's not a big deal. It's just a few letters different. Epithelial, epidermis, what's it matter? We'll work on one or the other. How long are you going to hang out with that doctor? Be careful hanging out with people who tell you to be loving. And watch how, as they profess their quote-unquote supposed love for you, when the stress is up and the chips are down, what kind of energy they point at both themselves and at you. So there's a piece of information that you might feel helpful in recognizing that one of the goals of this work is to tap into that active presence of love, that state of being, and rather than setting ourselves up for failure by attempting to do love, then get your mind to support you in moving the direction of recognizing the truth about yourself and undoing any false self. You remember Yeshua says, for me, in order for you to live, you've got to die. So the underlying work of this particular body of information is to learn to forgive, that is, remove anything that is unlike love, so that the only thing left is the truth of who you are. The Greeks tell us that Yeshua told us to love one another. He never said it. If you force that Greek imposed meaning into Yeshua's mouth, it leaves you stuck in an error upon which most of our other errors rest. Following the Greek idea, we try to do love, which is impossible. The command in Aramaic was worlds apart. It was to be love. One command leaves people striving to do the impossible. The other, the Aramaic, explains something achievable. And people who want to nullify the words there, remember that Yeshua says, the power of life and death is in our words. Accurate.